The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum of Accelerated Government Strategies, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Women of Washington is a series of weekly radio interviews with Washington, D.C.'s most ambitious and influential female executives, role models for the next generation of Washington leaders. Aileen and Gigi interview the most accomplished women in Washington who share their life lessons and secrets to success.
I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum.
Today, our guest is Joanne Chiedi. Joanne is the Principal Deputy Inspector General in the Office of Inspector General at the Department of Health and Human Services. As the highest-ranking career official, she leads an independent and objective organization of more than 1,600 professionals who oversee the integrity and the efficiency of the nation's $1 trillion investment in federal health and human services programs.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Joanne, let's begin with your background. Virtually all of the successful women that we speak to had a big influence in their life when they were growing up. So who or what was your biggest influence or inspiration?
Gigi, I think I'm fortunate in my life, and I've had several people who have been a great influence. Of course, growing up, your teachers have a great influence on your life. But I have to say, and it may sound like a cliche because a lot of people say this, but my parents. I'm a first-generation Italian, so my parents immigrated here in the 1950s. And, you know, like most, didn't have much money in their pocket and raised a family. I have a brother and a sister, owned a tailor shop, so built their own business. And really were just selfless people who gave us the confidence and courage to basically do whatever we wanted in this great United States of America. So they really influenced my life. Growing up, I was always fascinated by people who just overcome adversity, like Helen Keller, for example, someone who was deaf and blind during a period of time when people expected people like that to be institutionalized, and she did the exact opposite. And now that I'm older, my mother-in-law actually is a great inspiration. She spent her entire adult life in foster care. And this is a woman who has a lot of tenacity and took advantage of public service as far as getting an education. And, someone who didn't have that foundation, like myself, let's say, two parents caring for them, she's a phenomenal woman with a tremendous amount of compassion and energy. So I look at her, and she's certainly someone that I look up to.
Joanne, earlier you talked a little bit about your parents. And they sounded like wonderful people. Mm-hmm. Were you the first one in your family to go to college?
Yes, I was. So I think in the time that I was growing up, and my sister had a great job at the FBI at the time, and she was a secretary, and she had gone to St. Patrick's Academy here in Washington, which was a business school for women. And so I think my parents just thought I would follow that path. I mean, having a federal job was a dream job, you know, that it had stability and growth. And so, that wasn't quite my passion, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I had other dreams for myself. And so I applied to different colleges and got in to a few. And I thought, okay, what would my parents pretty much readily accept? And so Mount St. Mary's University, I'm Catholic, and I've gone to Catholic school my entire life. I thought, okay, that would be an easy sell. So probably a month before I had to enter into school, and I had savings, I basically told my parents, I don't want to be a secretary. I want to go to college and have another path in my life. And they supported it wholeheartedly. So it was great. And it was during the time, you know, Jimmy Carter, the CDs were like at 17% as far as interest rates were concerned. So that helped a little bit in affording my college. But I also worked in school, so helped out.
So you didn't take typing?
I didn't take typing. I was not a good typist in high school when the nuns were teaching typing. That was not my best class. So I had somewhat of an aversion. I've gotten better over time, but I'm still like the one finger typer. So no, that's not my best skill set.
You had some unique experiences when you were at the Mount.
Yes, I did. You know, again, I was, I've worked since I was 14 years old. I mean, I like to work. And so I was able to get a job at the state's attorney's office. And I got some, you know, that was my first flavor of public service. I think the criminal investigators would always try to, they would always try to surprise me. Like if we had a murder case actually, and they would show me like a dead body and picture of the, you know, different pictures that I think they were waiting for me to react. And I'd be like, oh. When's lunch? Yeah, so I would always try to have an opposite reaction. But boy, just the men and women that worked in that agency in Frederick, Maryland really just catapulted me and really paved the way and gave me a clear vision of what I wanted to do in the future.
So Joanne, you've had a long, really successful career in public service, and most of it has been fighting for others. Was there somebody or something that inspired you in particular to do that in public service?
You know, when I started, I think my own life story and actually watching even my parents as coming here, they didn't speak English. You know, they had some rough spots in some instances, people trying to take advantage of them in one way or another. So I always was... someone I think who people say I'm a caretaker, and I think that's true. When I started I actually started at the Justice Department as a student intern, and I worked with these incredible, passionate attorneys, and it was just really clear to me that they were trying to change the world for the better, and I wanted to be part of that.
You know, if you go outside of Washington, D.C., sometimes I think that there's this perception of federal workers that they're just part of this giant bureaucracy, mm-hmm. and they're, you know, punching the clock and working their time. But, you know, often when we talk to people like you, we just hear stories where that's not the case. Mm-hmm. So is there a particular incident that stood out where you really recognize that there was a lot of passion mm-hmm. in government workers?
Sure. Well, Gigi, I always laugh when I hear about that. And even my own friends would tease me sometimes, hey, you work for the government, you know, do you get home at 5? I've never had that job. So I it just is foreign to me. And even when I started as a, you know, GS2, and again, fearing typing, I had to take the typing test because back then women had to do that. Luckily I passed. I worked hard, you know. I never looked at the clock. I've always loved what I've done. I mean, I would jump out of bed, couldn't wait till my feet hit the floor to get to work because I knew the mission ahead of me. I've just have found that in my career. The prosecutors that I've worked with at the Justice Department preparing for trial, when we were on the road, we worked 24 hours a day because we knew if we didn't, you know, win in protecting those individual rights, it was a loss for society. So we were very passionate about that. In the when I worked for the Office of Redress Administration, and that was a program to pay Japanese Americans and permanent residents who were interned during World War II or lost their property, certainly their liberty, you know, some of the individuals were in their 100 years old. Our oldest claimant was 107 years old. So there was an urgency to get those individuals identified and located and paid. And they received a presidential apology. It wasn't just about the $20,000 payment, which they received, but they wanted that presidential apology. So there was such an urgency, and I can remember in the beginning of the program, our goal was to verify 10,000 people in the first 3 months. And this is pre-internet. So literally people were sleeping in their offices to meet that goal because they knew behind that number and that research was an individual waiting to have that apology. And that's, you know, that to me is just so incredible. So I don't know the job where you punch the clock. I don't think I'd be very happy with that either. So I haven't found it, nor even where I work today in the Office of Inspector General. There's such a great passion for the work that they do.
Today, our guest is Joanne Chiedi, Principal Deputy Inspector General in the Office of Inspector General, Department of Health and Human Services. Coming up, we'll hear about Joanne's role at Department of Justice, working in the Civil Rights Division. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, our guest is Joanne Chiedi, Principal Inspector General in the Office of the Inspector General, Department of Health and Human Services. Joanne, first, let's talk about your role at the Civil Rights Division, Department of Justice. What was your mission and what was the job like?
Well, I started my career in the Civil Rights Division at the Department of Justice working in the employment litigation section. So basically, it was a protection of people's civil rights. So it's sex, race. At that point, I was trying to remember if sexual orientation was part of it. I think that came later. And national origin. And I worked as a paralegal specialist at the time and really assigned to some fabulous attorneys, litigators. And the cases that we worked on were really just fascinating and actually somewhat startling that in particularly in the 1980s and in the South, not only just sexual discrimination, sex discrimination, but also race discrimination. And that was my first experience. And actually, you know, sometimes in Washington, you read a report, you read an investigation report, but, you know, working with these attorneys, which really influenced my career moving forward, we went on the road. You know, we had a case in the Department of Transportation in one of the states. And they were talking about these large machineries that they were like they had to operate, but they were discriminated against from being a foreman, like moving up to the supervisory role, which impacts your wages and caring for your family. And so they were talking about these pieces of equipment. I'm like, what are these? So went on the road, and we actually went on a site where they were actually laying asphalt. And sure enough, you saw the white foreman, you know, in the cars, having, you know, the supervisory jobs and the African Americans operating the machinery. And I can just remember standing there in my heels, sinking into the asphalt because they were laying it, shoving my business card into the pockets of the African Americans saying, please call me. And you know, as I thought about that, I thought about how brave they were as well, because their foremen and their supervisors were also looking at them. But I think, you know, they were making a stance like, we want fair wages and we want an opportunity. And that just, you know, when you see someone and you look into their eyes, it just propels you to work hard to ensure that justice is done. And, you know, oh, time and time again, you know, African-American bank tellers, you know, if you're light skin, you're able to be a bank teller. If you were dark skin, then you worked in the maintenance in the basement. I mean, just startling things that we would see that I thought, you know, this certainly couldn't happen in this great, you know, United States of America. But unfortunately, it does. I think it's gotten a lot better. But we, you know, you just can't forget that. And again, it just has inspired me to continue to work for people who need a voice or might be a little vulnerable.
Well, that's very inspirational. What about our listeners out there who might be listening to this thing? I want to go make a difference like that. What kind of background would you need to have to be able to find an opportunity like that to make a difference?
Well, I think it starts with a passion. Yeah, so determination, because it's not easy to apply and get a federal job these days. But I think Office for Personnel Management is really making great strides to make it more of a streamlined process. But I would urge kids, people in their 20s, they're ready to graduate school, to seek out those internships. Talk to their guidance counselor. Get out to their community. Do work with them. Talk to people, because you never know who you're going to meet, and they may be part of that Justice Department, or they may have a program that you may not be aware of. But I think if you're in school, the best way to do it is to seek some counseling from a guidance counselor, but also apply for those pathway programs that are available through the Office of Personnel Management, because we certainly always want to attract the best and the brightest in the federal public service.
With all the recent issues in the news about law enforcement and minorities being treated fairly, do you think things have changed a lot?
I do. I do. And I see it in a portion of the group that I oversee is law enforcement. And there are both men, women, and minorities part of that workforce. And I it's colorblind in my office. And I really have a great respect for that. And actually, for law enforcement, I somewhat fear for my folks, when they're out on the streets. So that's something that I have to say that keeps me up at night.
The world of law enforcement is very traditional and very male-dominated. So very few women have risen to the kind of success that you have. So you've broken the glass ceiling on a couple of different fronts, right? We always think of it in terms of women, but also for minorities and for LGBT. So to what do you attribute that success in shattering the glass ceiling?
It's hard for me to look internally into myself and say exactly what it was. But I think when you have a drive to do something and you have a vision, it's something that you just keep at. You may not be successful the first time, and I would just say you can't give up. You can't certainly not give up on yourself. I mean, I look at even here in Washington, D.C., look at Kathy Lanier. I mean, she has an incredible background and overcome incredible adversity. And, talking about inspiration, I look at her and go, wow, that's incredible. So I tend to look at other women rather than myself, because I think I'm just Joanne that really inspire me. So I think women are making great strides. I think times have changed. I think when people no longer say the first woman, like the first attorney general, the first African-American attorney general. I think the Buffalo Bills just hired the first woman assistant coach. So I think when we stop saying the first woman and it just becomes common is when the glass ceiling has completely shattered and it doesn't exist anymore.
Were there any times where there was any special strategy that you had to employ to get along and get ahead in that world, either because you were a woman or because you were LGBT? Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't, I think for me is I try to be nice to everybody. And I think having a smile goes a long way and being positive goes a long way. I mean, you could sit there and be cynical, but I don't think that helps. And even for me, being gay, I didn't really come out even at work. For the longest time, although I'm sure people may have suspected or whatever, because to me it wasn't the most important thing. It wasn't who I was as far as being the primary of what I wanted to do in life. So when I finally did come out at work, and even my friends, my high school friends, my grade school friends, because I'm a native Washingtonian, unlike some of my friends in college, it was a big so what. Feel like my sexual orientation has ever kept me back, but I know others struggle with it, and that's why I want to talk about it today. So anyone out there who might be struggling or feels despair, not to feel that way, and just believe in yourself, and that don't let that define you is would be my advice.
Today, our guest is Joanne Chiatti, Principal Inspector General, Department of Human Health and Services. Joanne, you spent the majority of your career in public service. Would you recommend it to a young woman today to join public service?
Absolutely. You know, public service, what I've always said is if you're an entrepreneur, public service is a great place for you to work because it provides you with such a wide variety of things to do. And government, you know, performs different duties. And in like the Office for Redress Administration, that program did not exist. We had to build that from the ground up. So we built a business. When the program was about to sunset, because it had a 10-year lifespan, and we actually finished the program in 6 years because there was such an urgency to pay individuals, we wanted to end the program early, so we saved the taxpayer some money here. We built a business of litigation support where I knew that the attorneys, based on my experience in the employment litigation section, attorneys needed help bringing their casework together. You want the attorneys to litigate. You don't want them to worry about, you know, summarizing a deposition. So we created another business in the Department of Justice, and it gave people jobs and opportunities. So if you have a passion for public service, if you like building businesses, if you have a passion for science, I mean, at the Department of Health and Human Services, at the NIH, we employ the brightest, the best scientists in the world. It's just, there's so many assets of the government that if you have a vision and if you have a skill set and you're willing to work hard, don't, you know, it's not a 9-to-5 job, I can just tell you that, then public service is the place to be.
Today, our guest is Joanne Chiatti, Principal Deputy Inspector General in the Office of Inspector General, Department of Health and Human Services. Coming up, we'll ask Joanne about her current role at HHS. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, our guest is Joanne Chiatti, Principal Inspector General, Department of Health and Human Services. Joanne, I got to ask you about your role, your current role in the Office of Inspector General at HHS. Healthcare programs in today's landscape are just so very complex. And let's face it, complexity provides opportunity for fraud, waste, and abuse. You must be very busy. Tell us about your mission at OIG and with the HHS.
Thank you, Aileen. Yes, healthcare is complicated. And core to our mission is improving the value that the Department of Health and Human Services programs deliver to the American people. When you think about health and human services and all of its assets, it really touches people throughout their life, from cradle to grave. There are people who basically benefit from Department of Health and Human Services programs and don't even know it's Department of Health and Human Services. I'd like to think, first of all, and I'd like to say that a majority of healthcare providers and people who do business with government grantees and contractors do play by the rules. I want to just say that and do an incredible job. But there are some bottom feeders out there that we have to ensure that stay out of those programs and prevent them from working in those programs. And so we're really focused on access, quality, and costs. And through our audits, we look at individuals who perhaps are abusing the program. Through our evaluations, we're looking at individuals who perhaps have wasteful practices. Through our law firm, we have some incredible attorneys. We provide industry guidance. Healthcare is very complex, and people do want to play by the rules. So we provide them guidance on how to follow those rules. We also do a lot of outreach and technical assistance. So it's focusing on the positive part of the care and the services that Department of Health and Human Service provides. But there are those people who are opportunists. Most recently, our investigators who are the best in federal government investigate alongside of our federal law enforcement partners, the FBI, an individual by the name of Dr. Fada. Dateline did a story of Dr. Fada last week. And this was a hematologist, oncologist, who instead of looking at a patient and caring for them, looked at patients as if they were dollar signs. He basically told patients they had cancer and did not, and treated them as if they had cancer. And those that had cancer overtreated them to the tune of over $34 million in false billings. I'm happy to say Dr. Fada will spend the rest of his life, the next 45 years, in federal prison. But those are the cases that, you know, keeps me up at night, focusing on the quality of care. And our work there with our federal partners, as well as the prosecutor, we actually, once we found out what Dr. Fada was doing, we shut him down in 6 days. I mean, that's pretty incredible. And we ensured all of his patients were taken care of and with other providers. And I'm really proud of that work. And when you talk to the investigators about that case, you can see it as well, that the passion in their eyes. And that's really what catapults them. You know, it's the individuals that are stealing and really harming patients that, at least from a federal perspective, investigative perspective, our men and women work hard. And then from an audit perspective, I mean, you know, when you see abusive billing, I mean, that's actually money that the government can give back. So in our work, we have an incredible return on investment, and the money that we're able to get back into the government actually goes back in the Medicare program. So we're really proud of that. So we help stabilize that program. You know, it's funny that I landed in the OIG office, given where I started my career. And I just think I'm probably the luckiest person in the world to have this job. So
first, thank you for you and your team for all you do. But I got to ask you, in today's complexity of the world of the cloud and the Internet of Things and this massive amount of data out there, does that increase the complexity of doing your investigation or make it easier? I mean, how does that affect your mission?
Both. So, you know, there is a lot of data out there, and it's all about the data, and it's bringing it to a level that you can interpret and look at. And You want things electronically because you want to have access. It kind of helps you from not having to go out, you know, and actually seize evidence where, you know, people can destroy information. And it actually allows you to manipulate the information quickly and actually see patterns of fraud. Our chief data officer is a new role in our organization. You know, we're able to see aberrant billing behaviors, which is helps us prevent the fraud and abuse and the waste from happening. So in this day of data, I think what we're really focused on is ensuring that it's safe and secure as well, because that's also important, especially with electronic health records. You know, we want to make sure that the data is used for its intended purposes and not diverted to do something else.
Joanne, switching topics a bit here, in doing research for the interview, I found that you're asked to speak in public quite often, and I can see why, because you do it very well. Do you think that, what role have strong communications played in your career? Do you think that that's, you know, been an important building block in your career?
Absolutely. Communicating, you know, I tend to be a plain-spoken type of communicator because I need to relate to different people. And especially as a leader in an organization, I look at my own organization first as far as who I need to communicate the most to, because if I'm not clear in the mission and the goals and the priorities, then it causes a little chaos. But if I can, you know, clearly state what the priorities are for our organization, and certainly from what the Inspector General wants as well, who, by the way, he's a fabulous boss. then the organization is not moving in the same direction. And when you have to oversee $1 trillion and people aren't moving in the same direction, aren't realizing what the values are of the organization, what the priorities are, then you're not as effective and efficient. And, you know, if we provide oversight and we ensure programs are economical and efficient and effective, then we have to walk the walk and talk the talk. And so we want to ensure that we communicate clearly. As far as speaking out in the public, you know, Department of Health and Human Services has so many assets. It's like overseeing Procter & Gamble, you know. And we need to clearly communicate our mission to show that we're there to help. I mean, we are the Inspector General Office, and we are independent, but we're not here to harm the program. We're here to make it better. We're here to drive that positive change, because if you are in foster care, if you are a family in need of services, if you have a mental health issue and need access to care, if you have a drug addiction and need to get over that addiction, Health and Human Services provide those programs to lift people up. And so we want to make sure that they have access to them.
So did this, going back to kind of this talent you have for public speaking and communicating, is that something that you just came naturally to you, or did, because a lot of people are very afraid to speak in public, particularly when they're being videoed, and I've seen a lot of videos with you or in front of large crowds. Is that something that just is a natural talent that you have, or was it something you had to work on?
I think it just is innate, you know, and it started even with the redress program. We conducted over 100 workshops across the country, talking to thousands of individuals face to face. And I learned from there that, you know, speaking from the heart and understanding why you're there and why the people are there to see you, and being authentic, I think is really important. But, you know, I've been doing it for a long time, and I always look for the sleepers in the audience to see how effective I am. And I try to be entertaining and somewhat funny, but sometimes my sayings are wrong, or, you know, off the cuff may not always be the right thing to do. But I just try to be as authentic as possible.
Today, our guest is Joanne Chiedi, Principal Deputy Inspector General in the Office of Inspector General, Department of Health and Human Services. Coming up, we'll ask Joanne about what she likes to do when she's not working. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
This is Executive Editor Jason Miller. Follow me on Twitter to get the inside track on IT, management, and contracting news that matters the most to federal executives at JMillerWFED.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, our guest is Joanne Chiedi, Principal Deputy Inspector General in the Office of Inspector General, Department of Health and Human Services.
Joanne, you have had such success in your career, but with all the competing priorities in their lives, many of the women we talk to have had to make some tough choices along the way. And sometimes those decisions can either dampen their success or send them in a different direction, or maybe actually enhance it. Did you encounter any obstacles or forks in the road?
Yes, and in your career, as you decide to move along, or even where you are, you have to approach things calmly. Listen to your instincts, because they're usually right, you know, whatever your gut feels. And ask your mentor and coach, you know, when you approach a challenge or an obstacle, people that, you know, that you really respect, their opinions, pick up the phone, go have a cup of coffee, and ask them if they've had a similar challenge or an obstacle. And typically they have. And I find that people are extremely gracious with their time and always willing to give advice. So you're not alone. This is usually an obstacle others have faced. So I would say, you know, reach out to your coaches and your mentors and your peers.
Is there one that stands out in your mind that somebody helped you work your way through?
One gentleman who I'm sorry to say has passed away. And that's one of the things I always encourage people. If you're ready to retire and you are ready, don't delay, because you work hard all your life and you want to be able to enjoy your life. And this individual had 3 good years after retirement, but I wish he had more. When I was at the Department of Justice as the deputy executive officer there, he was always saying to me, like, when are you going to move on? I was like, well, what do you mean? I love working here. I love the people. I love the mission. He goes, no, you need to move on. And I was like, why? He goes, because you need to be a senior executive. And I never really thought about it, quite frankly. I mean, I really loved what I did and what I was doing. And I said, well, okay. And so I got the support of my boss, and I ended up in the SES career development program. But, you know, sometimes people see things in yourself before you see them, and you just have to open yourself to that. And this is someone who definitely, without his encouragement at the time, I probably would have gotten there, but he got me there a lot faster.
Joanne, you're very, very have a very, very busy career, but what do you do after work?
So after work, and sometimes during work, during my lunch hour, but not always consistently, I love to exercise. I really, you know, being younger, you know, in grade school, I was actually like, I joined the Catholic, you know, softball team. And, I was like the youngest person on the team. I love team sports and I love just the outdoors. And so, playing different sports, I'm not as fast as I used to be. So I've now like had the passion to run. I've run a marathon here, the Marine Corps Marathon, which talk about inspiring. Army 10-miler a couple times, and again, just inspiring. You know, you're tired, you're sore, you're running, and then someone runs past you with, you know, an amputee, and it just it just makes you stronger. I mean, it's just, to me, running and exercising, you meet really interesting people who also have the similar passion for the outdoors. I like, my sister-in-law got me into adventure racing, which is mountain biking, orienteering, which helps me because I have no sense of direction, and usually a kayaking or a canoeing sport, all three in one day. And those are a lot of fun, and you meet a lot of neat people. So for me, I love the outdoors. I like exercise. I like trying to stay fit. And mentally, it also helps me just kind of think about things. I'm not run that exercises with any earpiece or music. I like to hear the surrounding and the birds whistling and singing. And so I have a passion for that.
Do you have any causes that you are involved in?
A few. One cause personal to me is Alzheimer's. My father had dementia, and I really see from, you know, very proud man, very independent man, and how that really takes your life away. And it's not only hard for the individual, but the caretaker. And it was really hard for my mom and just everyone in the family just to see him deteriorate like that. And he knew. I think although he had dementia, he knew that he was not the same man. Another is Wounded Warriors Project and anything having to do with veterans. My nephew was Marine. My brother-in-law was Marine. My father-in-law was a Green Beret. And just, I think our service men and women need our support. So anything there I can do, I'm, you know, 100% in.
If you were going back in time, mm-hmm. and to see Joanne crossing that stage there at the Mount, what advice would you give her to help her achieve the results you have or even greater results in today's world?
So I would even, so the Mount, that's a good one because I spent a lot of time in the sun. So I would say, one, wear SPF. Protect your skin. Because you're going to, as you get older, you want to protect your skin. Surround yourself with positive people because there's plenty of people who will lift you up when you need to be lifted up. Be humble, embrace change, and don't delay in what you can do today because we can't predict the future. And, you know, if you help shape the future, that will help guide you throughout your career. Focus on the opportunities and not the problems. I think sometimes we always tend to focus on the negative rather than the positive. And so if you can focus on those opportunities, that will propel you forward. have a continuous commitment to learn. You might celebrate graduation, but guess what? You will continue to learn your entire life. You know, if you want to lead, I think you need to inspire people and then get out of the way and let them do their jobs. And I would say most importantly, and something that one of my mentors told me very early in my career, is max out on your 401k, because time flies. You work your entire life. That's where you spend most of your life, is at your job. So you really want to secure your future as soon as possible.
Today, our guest is Joanne Chiedi, Principal Deputy Inspector General in the Office of Inspector General, Department of Health and Human Services. Aileen and I are founders of Accelerated Government Strategies. You can learn more about AGS and the work we can do to help accelerate your business plans for public sector at excelgovstrat.com. I'm Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.